So I feel like the Holy Spirit of the Lord challenged me to stop just talking about the verse that we do each month and learn it myself. And so the first half of it, like Dr. Swangham said, I thought the best way to do it is a verse at a time. Actually, I think the best way to do it is just to read the whole passage over and over and over and over and over again, and finally it'll come in. But my wife's mind works a different way than my mind, and we're doing this together. So I went with the way she said. She said, why don't we do the first verse, the first week of the month, second verse, second week of the month. And now I'm saying all this stuff, and I've forgotten what I remembered. So anyway, I'm going to make a mistake here. I'm just going to say that. I'm nervous, but I feel like I need to take my test, take my quiz. Romans 13, 11 through 14. Actually, Romans 11, 13, 11, and 12. And that knowing the time that it is high time, now it is high time to wake out of sleep for, I don't have it. For now is, I'm looking at people, are helping me. Thank you. That's good. I feel like I'm at the spelling bee and the parents are out there. Let's try that one more. Let me take a glance at it. Okay, yes. And that knowing the... Now I can't do it at all. We're going to talk about the context of the Bible. I'll work even harder this week and have verses 1 through 3 next week. You guys will be expecting it, so hopefully it won't be as... it will be just as nerve-wracking. Okay, anyway, but we're going to do it, even if I fail, because I want you to try to do it too. Okay, not that you've got to come up here and do it, but I want us to work on these. We have the whole verse for the whole month. Let's work at it. So... 2 weeks ago, we began an overview of Exodus, and I said that we're going to start a series called The Context and Content of Exodus. And so today, I thought it would be good for us just to think about all the different contexts that are around the Bible when we read the Bible. Just thinking generally... We have the Bible. It's right here. You might have bought yours this year or last year. Maybe you have one that you treasured that you got when you were a teenager. I remember when I was a teenager, I got my first nice Bible. I think it was imitation leather, but it was better than that cardboard cover and all of that. And it was a Scofield Reference Bible. It had notes in it. I remember I went back to the bookstore that happened to be right where the men's bathroom is now in our... facilities before we rearrange stuff, and I looked at it, and I looked at it, and I looked at it, and finally I got it. Anyway, whenever you got your Bible, it has been written long before that. even though we might have bought it this year or 10 years ago, it wasn't written this year or 10 years ago, and so there's a great danger, some of the dangers can really mess us up in our mind, and others are just, we have misunderstandings that don't have as big of consequences. But the point is, the Bible was written 2,000 years ago or more, and people didn't live like we do now 2,000 years ago or more. And so, people might have lived here in this area, but the Bible wasn't written to the people in America. It was written to a particular person. So there are many different contexts that we need to understand when we're reading the scriptures and studying the scriptures. And so today I'm going to just list six of them, six different contexts that we should try to keep in mind when we're reading scriptures, so that as we read or as we go back and study and think through a passage or, you know, a teaching or an event, we should try to think of these things and say, okay, so this didn't happen, you know, in town here today or last week. It happened in Galilee, or it happened in Babylon, or it happened somewhere over there. What do I need to understand or remember to get a better understanding of what the scriptures are? Because the Bible was written to people. It's for us, but it wasn't written to us. I want to be careful the way I say that. But what I mean by that is that there was real people who lived in a real city, and had real things happening around them and had a real understanding. There was civilization, not the same kind of civilization. I mean, they didn't have iPhones and movie theaters, but they had communication. They had entertainment. They had things that they understood. They lived in a certain type of a government, and all of those things, the writers who God used to write the scriptures knew that. They wrote within that context to people in that context. So our danger, or our, not really our danger, our job, if we're going to really understand scriptures, is to work to get back into that context so we know what the Bible meant to the people it was written to. Once we understand that, it's way easier to say, okay, this is what God wanted them to understand. That's what he wants me to understand. Or this is, how does that apply to me 2,000 years later or 3,000 years later? So, quickly, I'm going to give you, I found a resource that had six contexts. And I think it was really helpful for me as I was looking through it, and I thought I would share it with you this morning. First of all, when we're reading the Bible, we should remember that it's written in a historical context. As I already kind of said, the people that it was written to, the people that it's written about, are real people. They lived in history. They lived a certain amount of time, just like we lived a certain amount of time. We were born on this date, we're going to die on this date. We were, you know, married on this date, and all the different... They had events. They were the same. They're not just pictures on a storybook page that somebody just created out of in fantasy land. They are real people that lived in a historical at a particular time in history. There's two right now histories that we should be thinking about. Where did this event take place, or when was this teaching given in biblical history? Okay, the history that we can piece together and figure out by just looking at the Bible. But everything that happened in the Bible happened in the world around us. Also, just like, I mean, we have our church history, but our church history happens in Chesterton, Indiana, in the United States of America. And your church, if you're a college student or visitor, you know, that religious history happens in a non-religious, non-biblical history, and they are affected by it. When Luke says, in the days of Caesar Augustus, boom, everybody who Luke was writing to knew what that meant. It hadn't been that long since Caesar Augustus had overthrown the Republic of Rome and become the dictator of Rome. You know, but we don't know that. If we just say, oh, Caesar Augustus, how do you say that? Why do they put that A and the E together like that when they spell that word? That's all we see. Not necessarily, but that could be all we see. Right? So there's a biblical history. Where does this fit in history? Just finished yesterday teaching Ruth to our Bible club kids. Where does Ruth fit? Everyone agrees that it happened during the time of the judges. But the judges covers like a 200, 300 years. Did it happen right at the end of the period of judges? Did it happen in the beginning of the period of judges? The resource I was looking at thought that an ancient Jewish scholar, thought that Ruth was the daughter of Eglon. Well, that puts a little kind of, so it's more in the beginning of the judges. I don't know if that's true, but the timing there, you know, if we were reading it historically, we might read Judges 1, 2, 3, and then Ruth, and then 4, 5. The biblical historical context, and then the non-biblical historical context. So some questions to ask about what we're reading. What time period are we dealing with? What time period in history is it? What is happening on the world stage at this time? What is happening at the regional level? We think, oh, I can talk to somebody in Cambodia in 35 seconds. No, that didn't happen that way back then. But people traveled the world back then. And believe it or not, Israel is at the crossroads of the world. Palestine, Canaan is at the crossroads of the world. people are going to Babylon and beyond, and they're going through Israel to get to Egypt. And Egypt, tremendous civilization going through Canaan to get over into Europe or to get over to. So all the ideas of the world basically are passing through the Bible lands. So what's happening on the world stage has at least some influence on what happens in the Bible. What's happening at the regional level? What's happening at that particular location of the story or of the writing? Another thing is what has happened in the past that's informing these present events. So it's a historical thing. Why did, you know, we have a certain celebration? Why? Well, we're celebrating something that happened in the past. We're a historical people, and they were historical people. Is there something, is there some cause to this effect? Is there something in the past that is influencing what I'm reading about right now? The Bible is a historical book, and we should look for those types of things rather than just, and we don't do this, I hope, pull in six verses out of it and say, I love those six verses. They mean this to me. That might not be at all what they mean. Okay? Saying they mean this to me is a very postmodern way of thinking. It's like, truth is whatever it means to you. It means one thing to you and one thing to me and one thing to somebody else. And as long as I feel good about it and you feel good about it, we'll, you know, everybody's good. The truth is the truth. It's not that. Anyway, so there, that's a historical context. Then, in these contexts, we might say they're like a set of glasses that we look at, that we use when we look at a passage. We're going to have our historical glasses and look at it and take and then put on a set of lenses that's another context. And they are not, I don't know how the doctor, the eye doctor works, but I know I've sat there and they have this, you know, they just flip things up and down and they'll layer them and all that kind of thing. Well, these contexts aren't all separate from each other. They will overlap some more than others. But, so the next one, the context is the cultural context. The cultural context. We have Brother Eccles here. He's going to be speaking for us tonight. And he's missionary to Australia. English-speaking place, all a bunch. I mean, we all speak English. There's probably no differences between America and Australia. We all laugh. We have Brother Samuel Kim here. He's from Korea, and he's in, well, he's not in. He has been in China, ministering in China. Well, Korea and China, they're all Orientals. There's no difference over there. There's nothing different between those places, right? No. When we talk about missionaries, one of the things that we talk about is what? Culture shock. You get there and you look around and things are so different. I bet that Brother Eccles even could say, wow, you know, I didn't have to worry about the language, but then I did. They used this word this way. I'm like, what do you mean? You're saying a certain phrase. He's probably got five in his mind right now. And we're like, huh? Okay. And it's an English word. But there's the language. There's the food, the clothing, the music, the literature. Even the way they use their money is different. We have exchange rates. The social norms. What I remember. Manners, what's acceptable? Wow, I need to move along because that's the only second one and there's six of them. But I remember missionary Rick Martin saying that there was a way to say hi to people in the Philippines. This is, I don't know, a long time ago because he hasn't spoken here. But he said you kind of raise your eyebrows and you go like this, and that meant hi in the Philippines. And I don't know if he was telling the truth or just joking about how he came back to the United States and he'd raise his eyebrows and went like this to a guy, and the guy looked at him like, you're weird, man. Get out of here. You know, what's acceptable in one place for normal communication, nonverbal body language communication is different in another place. And the societal norms, societal values, even the government, the way the government interacts with the people is different. The religions, these are things that we should consider. What's happening culturally in a passage. So, and there are some major culture themes in the Bible. One is the theme of honor and shame. Honor and shame. We will, you know, if I can't say the verses perfectly, I've got a little bit of shame. Okay? But this, the honor shame societies are totally different. This honor and shame passes from generation to generation. You, if you are the grandfather or the great grandfather of, or if you're the grandson or the great grandson of a person who brought shame on his name, there's still shame on you. It's just, it's entrenched deeply and into families and even into towns, cultures, communities. That one person did this. Ten men do something and a whole tribe gets wiped out for it. Okay. There's honor and shame, and it spreads more than just, it's more than just individuals. Individuality is very much, well, I'll get to that. So another cultural theme is Hellenism. Now, Hellenism is related to a Greek word that talks about the Greek culture. When Alexander the Great conquered the world, the Greek as an emperor, he was 30-something when he died. And after he died, there was not one powerful Greek emperor. The Greek Empire lasted as a governmental unit, lasted very short. They split up into four groups. There's the Seleucids, the Ptolemies, the couple others. And so they didn't have a lot of power. But we're still influenced by Greek culture, because that Alexander the Great was an apostle. He was an evangelist, an apostle of Greek culture. He believed in it greatly. He thought it was the greatest thing that ever hit the world. And more, I mean, he conquered lands, but when he went into a place, he named streets, he named cities, he built libraries. He did as much as possible to push the Greek culture into every part of the world. After that, the Romans came along. Eventually, the Romans came along, and they conquered governmentally or militaristically, but people have said for centuries that the Greeks conquered the Romans because the Romans just adopted Greek culture almost in total. So Greek culture changed the world that it sat in, and it continues to influence the world that it sits in. That's the world that Jesus came into. The whole New Testament is set in Greek culture, Hellenism. We need to understand. We need to learn. The more we can learn about that, the better we will understand how the many different events in the New Testament. And Greek culture does put a value on the individual. The individual value is higher than it was in Old Testament culture. Value is in a community. Even still today, there's a I was like, oh, okay, it makes sense. One of the first or second times I went to Israel, our guide said, you know, Israelites, they, not a one of them think that they can keep the whole law, but they don't feel like they have to. All they have to do is that their community has to keep the whole law. So if I can keep these 35 laws and somebody else can keep some other 35 laws, not that they sit together and assign them, but if, as a community, they are keeping the laws, that's the way they think. When Greek culture came along, it changed that. So that brings me to this other cultural thing, and that is tribal society. And this is back into that Old Testament idea, and you're going to have these communities that are tightly knit, and a community that's tightly knit, that brings us back to the honor and shame cultural thing. A community can be brought to shame by one person that's known from that community. Another cultural theme, you might be able to tell I decided to slow down and do some of this next week because we're still on number two. Another cultural theme is the temple. We go to church. We go to church every week. In the Old Testament, once we get to Exodus 25, or, you know, actually we can't even go to the tabernacle even at the end of Exodus. But in the law, we learn about the tabernacle, and then we have a temple. That's one central place of worship. Now, when all the tribes are gathered all around the tabernacle, it's kind of close, if you might put it that way. You got to remember, even there, there's 2 million people there. I mean, you got to walk past 500,000 if you're on the outskirts of camp to get to the tabernacle. How's that for context? Okay, but then we get into Israel. The temple's in Jerusalem. Now, Israel's a small country, but we don't have high-speed rail. We don't have cars. We don't, you know, maybe donkeys, mostly feet. So do you remember how much how many times the men of Israel were required to go to the temple to worship? Three times a year. There's the three major feasts that it's like you'll show up before the Lord at these. Three times a year. Somebody said once, we might see that pretty much that's all they did. And required, we look at Paul, we know he was traveling out in, you know, planting churches. He wasn't back there every 4 months for his. So I don't understand exactly how all that worked, but three times. You know, what would your life be like if you came to church three times a year? Okay, it's different. Now, I'm not saying that the only time they had anything was spiritual was three times a year, but it's a totally different way of thinking. And that's a totally different culture. So when we're reading in the Old Testament, you've got to remember, okay, so what's going on here? And then back in the New Testament, we have a rabbinical world, okay? So Jesus was a rabbi. I'm not trying to minimize him. He was more than a rabbi. But when Jesus stepped on the scene, everybody who saw him said, there's a rabbi. He spoke like a rabbi. He had followers. He had 12. And he had other followers that would listen to him teach, just like other rabbis did. So he used rabbinical language and words. So the rabbis, when they would speak, they might have a play on one word. They would have a certain word in their teaching that had deep meaning. That word reached back into writings and experiences of the people that everyone would understand when they said it. Now, I can't think of one well, but it's normally not spiritual context, but every one of us have done something like this. We're talking with our friends, and all of a sudden, a scene from a movie comes to our mind, and we quote a line from a movie, and everybody in the group knows the whole context that came with that little quote. Okay? So rabbis used that tool on purpose. But it wasn't movies. It was an event in their history or a spot in their law. So rabbinical world. So some questions to ask ourselves when we're looking at a passage of Scripture culturally. Is this passage in a Jewish context? Is it a Roman context? Is it an Egyptian context? Well, we're going to be in an Egyptian context as we proceed. Is it a Babylonian context? Is there a different context than that altogether? How is that context shaping or impacting this story or this teaching? What cultural clues are in the story? There are certain things as we read it, there's certain words that should say, okay, that's a key word. That's a word I need to look at and say, there's probably a cultural difference behind that word. What cultural clues are in the story? What cultural aspects are sitting below the surface of the story? How are values such as honor and shame influencing the story? Many years, seven or eight years ago, we went through Luke chapter 16, 15, the lost things, the parable of the two sons, the prodigal son and the other one. Honor and shame going on in there all over the place. And if you, I know I brought that out as we went through it. I don't have the time to do that right now. But The younger son shamed his father by asking for his inheritance, like saying, I wish you were dead. The older son shamed his father by not coming into the situation and saying, you shouldn't do that. Basically agreeing, but not in a different way. All kinds of shame, and the whole community is shamed when the man runs to receive his son back, this son that shamed him and them. Honor and shame all over there and all over things, things in the Bible. What assumptions are we making based on our own cultural norms? And this is where the danger comes. We read something and we put our culture into those interactions rather than putting ourselves into that culture. So that's the question. What assumptions am I making based on my own cultural norms that might not be accurate in the story? So that was two of the six. So that's just great. I'm ready for next week's lesson already. We'll try to get all four of them next week. If I don't take so long to try to say the verse, I might take longer to try to say the verse. Anyway, historical, where is this taking place in the Bible? And then what's taking place in the world around it? Because the people in the Bible, they knew about more than just the things that happened in the Bible. They knew about the things that are happening in the world around them. And then cultural, what cultural things are happening in there that are different than my culture? Probably about every one of them. Okay. I don't want us to be scared to read the Bible and think that we're always making a mistake. Because one thing that we know about the people in the Bible, they were human beings. They had a depraved, fallen nature. And we are human beings with a depraved, fallen nature. God was the same back then as he was now. As he is now. There's so much that's the same. The scriptures are true. They are constant. Okay, but to get the best understanding of what's going on back there, we need to consider, at least think about, what might be happening here in this culture or in this historical setting that's different that I'm not seeing if I just read it without even thinking. Because we'll get a much better understanding of the Bible, and we don't want to get a better understanding of the Bible just to understand the Bible better. We want to know what the Bible's saying because we're responsible to be obedient to what God's teaching us through what is said. All right, next week we'll...